Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, December 13th, 2016.
Our graduation rate isn't as low as it is in other places, but if it's not 100%, it's too low.
Monroe County Community School Corporation is working to implement a dropout prevention program in two area schools. More on that coming up in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, these local headlines.
The Indiana Department of Education released their A through F school grades for 2016 today. The Monroe County Community School Corporation received primarily A's and B's, with one D going to Fairview Elementary. Most schools maintained the same grade from the year prior, with some exceptions. Tri-North, Bloomington High School North, Marlin Elementary, and Lakeview Elementary all dropped from an A to a B, as did Jackson Creek Middle School, Templeton Elementary, and University Elementary. Part of that trend is probably due to a change in the methodology of how the grades are calculated. Other schools did better this year. Clear Creek and Grandview Elementary schools moved from C to B. Summit Elementary fell from a B to a C, and Fairview Elementary dropped from a C to a D. That's a loss of progress from last year, when Fairview finally received a C after three consecutive years of F grades. It is unclear whether the state will decide to impose consequences on schools with unsatisfactory grades. Last year, the state decided to hold testing data harmless, meaning test scores and other metrics would not be used to impose penalties against failing schools. That decision was the result of turmoil over the efficacy of the I-STEP system, including a months-long delay in getting test scores back. The Indiana State Teachers Association wants 2016 to be a second hold harmless year to reflect issues with testing and give schools more time to collect and analyze data. But Representative Robert Benning, the education policy leader in the House, was quoted by the Indianapolis Star saying that a second hold harmless year may run afoul of federal laws. Last year, the Department of Education granted Indiana a waiver from federal accountability requirements. So far, a similar exemption has not been granted for this year. This year, the state legislature voted to discontinue use of the I-STEP test and replaced with an as-of-yet-undetermined testing scheme. The I-STEP replacement process has been beset by delays. The rollout of the new test is not expected to happen until after the 2017-18 school year.
In the month following major electoral victories for marijuana legalization around the country, police in the Bloomington area have made two large weed-related busts. Indiana State Police say they recently arrested a 23-year-old Larkspur Lane resident for dealing marijuana after they smelled weed during a parole compliance check. Police said they found 7 pounds of marijuana, two handguns, and about $40,000 cash in the home on the southwest side of Bloomington. They also charged the man with neglect of a 2-month-old baby who was present at the residence. And last week, Indiana University police say they arrested a 25-year-old man following a 3-month-long undercover operation. Undercover officers allegedly purchased marijuana and MDMA several times from the suspect, whom they also suspect of selling to IU students. During the arrest, police said they found about 9 ounces of marijuana, as well as Xanax, MDMA, LSD, and methamphetamine. The man was charged with maintaining a common nuisance, 2 counts of dealing marijuana, dealing in a controlled substance, possession of methamphetamine, possession of marijuana, 2 counts of possession of paraphernalia, and 10 counts of possession of a controlled substance. The subject was not an IU student. Indiana remains one of 21 states that has not legalized medicinal or recreational marijuana. Nevada, Massachusetts, and California all voted to legalize recreational marijuana on November 8th. Several other states legalized medicinal marijuana. The Indiana State Legislature considered easing the punishment for marijuana possession in 2014, but the effort was abandoned after Governor Mike Pence voiced his disapproval. Pence, now the vice presidential-elect, reportedly said at the time, "I think we need to focus on reducing crime, not in reducing penalties," unquote.
The Monroe County Public Library is working to keep its wages and salaries up to local market rates. When the library's Board of Trustees reviewed the 2017 wage and salary schedule last week, Trustee Valerie Miriam expressed concern that the library's minimum rates are lower than those of Indiana University. Library Director Marilyn Wood said the library is working to keep pace with the local job market.
We're still below $10 an hour, and we're falling, unfortunately, further behind IU because they raised theirs again this year. And last year, if you remember, we said at that point in time last year, we said IU was at 10. And so we were trying to move toward that at 9. And so this year we're getting a little closer to 10, but then they moved again. So we're still creeping up there. But we have lost several people this year to IU. Mm-hmm. And we know that. So we do need to continue to move forward.
Human Resources Manager Kyle Wickemeyer-Hardy said the 2017 wage and salary schedule reflected at least a 75-cent increase to base pays.
We increased everybody by 75 cents, that market minimum, okay. or 3%, whichever is higher. So basically, people will get that same raise in 2017 upon approval.
Wickemeyer-Hardy said recent jobs postings brought in 75 to 100 applications, partly due to its pay scale and partly because the library is viewed as a good working environment.
The Monroe County Solid Waste Management District is working to limit what it accepts as bulky items. Operations Director Scott Morgan said the program currently accepts such a broad range of materials that the county ends up with items it probably shouldn't be taking. In his December 8th Board of Trustees meeting, Board Member Steve Volan asked Morgan what bulky items he'd like to stop receiving.
One of the obvious things is a truckload or a trailer load of construction material. That's not what we really want to be capturing. That's just kind of how things have evolved to, and we want to kind of go back to our roots, which are some of the couches, the chairs, the mattresses, you know, some of those types of larger items.
Where should somebody with a truckload of construction debris be going?
They would want to use either a private hauler or the transfer station here in Monroe County.
Okay, so no, they're just trying to dump it for free when they should be paying to properly dispose of their garbage.
Yes, we still want proper disposal, most definitely.
Got it.
Morgan said he and the executive committee are using the City of Bloomington's definition for bulky items as a guide to better define what the district will accept. The revised definition will then be used on flyers and other promotional materials. Morgan added that the district will be conducting its annual Christmas tree recycling from December 26th through January 14th. Trees must be stripped of decorations and lights before being dropped off at recycling centers.
Hoosiers ages 55 and older recently gave low scores to Indiana in a survey on the well-being of its elder citizens. That's according to a report in the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. The Gallup survey drew from 177,000 interviews conducted nationwide. Participants made statements about life purpose, social support, financial state, community pride, and physical health. Indiana ranked 46th of the 50 states. Hawaii ranked first, and West Virginia was last. Allen County Health Commissioner Deborah McMahon expressed her dismay at the results to the Journal-Gazette. McMahon reportedly said, quote, "It is disappointing, but helps sharpen our focus on where we need to concentrate our efforts to improve the well-being for older adults," unquote. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Graduation rates at Monroe County High Schools are higher than most other schools around Indiana, but school officials say they won't be satisfied until 100% of their high school seniors receive their diplomas. That's why they're working to implement a program called Communities in Schools to help address non-instructional issues that often become obstacles to completing high school. News Director Sarah Vaughn spoke with Vivian Ashmali, the Director of Communities in Schools of Indiana, and local MCCSC grant specialist Carol Gardner about the program.
Vivian, can you tell me what Community in Schools is? Sure. Communities and schools partners with local school districts, and we place a site coordinator in the school that will surround students with a community of support, empowering them to stay in school and achieve in life. That's our mission. So basically what that means is that, you know, there are a lot of students that have challenges that impact their ability to be ready to learn. And so Communities and Schools works with partner organizations within a community to help direct those support services to students that can benefit the most. So it's very individually designed for each community and each student that would benefit from Communities and Schools partnerships. Communities and Schools can work at any grade level, age level. In Bloomington, the request has been to start at the elementary school. And I think the thought process is that if we can work with families and build and students and build some good strategies and planning and good habits, that those students will be better prepared to make decisions as they go through the educational process. This program is highly supported by educators because it helps teachers teach. And if we can work to help remove some of those social, emotional, and community issues, then our classroom teachers can focus on the academics and focusing on helping their kids in the way they're trained to do.
Does the family of a student have to meet a certain criteria, say have a certain income level, in order to be able to be part of a Communities and Schools program?
No, actually, Communities and Schools really is kind of like a two-pronged approach. We work with programs and supports that can come in and benefit all kids. And those are some things that schools are already doing. It's just we can add some manpower to that, things like backpacks or school supplies or college and career experiences or enrichment kinds of activities. And then we work with a select group of students who are referred either through classroom teachers, other administrators, or through parents. And we provide intensive wraparound services to those students. And when we do that, we work with the families to provide those services.
So for those of us who aren't social workers, what constitutes wraparound services?
Sure. So maybe a teacher notices that a student is struggling to see the blackboard. So you can work to get that student eyeglasses, or it can be working even more broadly with families that may be experiencing anything from lack of work to homelessness. And all those things impact a student's ability to be able to focus when they come into the classroom. And so it can be, like I said, anything from food to basic needs to just helping families know that there are options out there and helping students and families plan and prepare for college. You know, the most important thing for students is to know that they have caring adults in their lives. And so what a Communities and Schools site coordinator does is meet with students on a regular basis and help them identify their goals and develop some planning and problem-solving skills and then support them as they're making those decisions and going through some of those challenges.
Carol Gardner, you're leading the MCCSC effort to implement Communities and Schools. This is basically about dropout prevention. Is that correct?
To keep kids from dropping out, you have to start early. So we always start in the elementary schools to help the parents make sure that they have the foundations so that when they do get to middle school and high school, that support is even exemplified. So the schools that we have talked to that have had this model in place for a while, that's exactly what they did, is they started in their elementaries and now they've expanded to their middle schools and high schools. Our graduation rate, because of what we do to help all students, even in alternative programs, isn't as low as it is in other places. But if it's not 100%, it's too low. So we want to make sure that we increase that even more and make sure that kids have the skills they need when they graduate. We want to make sure that everyone has their science, technology, engineering, mathematics in place. Besides literacy, we want to make sure STEM is in place. You know, we feel like we've got some great things in place already, but, you know, we want to make sure that we're hitting every student and are providing what will help them be successful in life.
Can you be specific about the kinds of services and support that students would get from communities and schools?
So every elementary school that we have applied for this particular support, which is Fairview and Templeton, will have a communities and school person who will make sure that everything is in place as far as the types of community agency support and or academic support. We have a model in place right now at Fairview where we have a person who takes all of our volunteers at that particular school, all of our community support at that school, and make sure that everything is provided to the families. You know, we're very concerned about young families that, you know, have these very young children, and we want to make sure that they have all the resources at their fingertips so that they know where they can go, who can help them, who can answer their questions. You know, we have amazing services here in our town, and lots of times the families and the agencies just don't connect for a variety of reasons. You know, we've reached out to IU and their health services that what kinds of things they can do to help families that have questions about their children's health, the questions about even just raising their children. Right now we have a partnership with Catholic Services with some counseling, but we need to, you know, make sure that all of our families are aware. But what communities and schools will do for us is make that we have something that is effective and efficient, and we'd like to duplicate that into the other schools.
So you mentioned in the school board meeting that the program supports topics like mentoring, parental engagement, health and nutrition. For example, mentoring, can you tell me who would be doing the mentoring and what kind of mentoring might be given?
Any one of our volunteers could be a mentor. Any one of our agencies could be a mentor. It could be teachers. It could be, you know, parents. But we need to make sure that we have the right people in the right place at the right time.
And when you mentioned parental engagement in the board meeting, how do you engage parents? What tactics might be used?
Well, that is one of the things that we'll get some help for, because as educators, we've always believed that we encourage parental support. But we need to hear from the parents. What kind of support do they need? We need to hear from others that have found some success in making sure that the parents feel supported. This will be a work in progress, of course, and we'll continue to learn. We're going to make sure that the parents have a voice, we're listening, and that we're providing what they need.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
Gardner says getting community buy-in was crucial to being able to get support from the state communities in schools program. Gardner says the Community Foundation of Bloomington and Monroe County have committed to being sponsors for the program. For more information about the communities in schools, go to communitiesinschools.org.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168. Or online at inscap.org.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
Hello, and welcome to The Ins and Outs of Money. I'm Christina with the It's Your Money Project. If you're starting a new job with health benefits or reviewing benefits at your existing job, you may see an option to choose some sort of health benefits account. Now is the time to become familiar with how each of these types of accounts work and how to use them for maximum advantage. Okay, first let's get our terminology straight. A health savings account, also called an HSA, is kind of like a 401k, except it's only used for healthcare, not retirement. You can only enroll in an HSA through an insurance provider, usually the insurance company through which your employer provides your benefits. Then there's the second kind of health benefits account, health reimbursement arrangements, or HRAs. HRAs are usually set up and funded solely by your employer, not an insurance company. The third type of health benefits account is a flexible spending account, or FSA. FSAs are usually set up by your employer, but you decide which qualified medical expenses to pay for with your FSA and how much to set aside for them, which is why they're called flexible. Confused yet? Let's start with the ways those three types of health benefit accounts are similar. One, for starters, HSA, HRAs, and FSAs are all pre-tax benefits. That means that whatever you or your employer contributes towards them, they're not subject to any of the usual taxes your paycheck earnings are. And that's true whether it's money going into the account or money being withdrawn. Two, HSAs, HRAs, and FSAs are all similar in that they can all be used towards the copays and deductibles associated with your healthcare expenses. They can also be used for directly purchasing medical and health supplies, although each plan is different and specifies exactly what's allowed. But typical items you can use your health benefits account to pay for include things like prescription drugs, pregnancy tests, first aid items, eyeglasses, and guide dogs, just to name a few. Three, oftentimes all three types of health benefit accounts come with a debit card so that you're paying health-related expenses directly out of the account. No filling out forms to submit or waiting to be reimbursed. The trick to understanding each type of account lies in understanding the differences between them. So here they are. First, you are the owner of your HSA, that's health savings account, as opposed to the other two types of accounts, which your employer owns. That means that if you leave your job, you can take your HSA with you. That money is yours to keep for your health care. With the HRA or FSA, on the other hand, any money left in your account goes back to the company when you leave. Second, different types of account treat money left in your account at the end of each year differently. Because you own an HSA account, all of your money stays in the account until you take it out, which means all of it rolls over every year. With an FSA, though, only a set amount, currently $500, can be rolled over at the end of each year, and the rest goes back to your employer. So if you don't use it, you lose it. With an HRA, which remember is a health reimbursement arrangement completely set up and maintained by your employer, it's up to the employer whether or not they limit the amount you can carry over and what the limit is. Third, there are different limits the IRS put on the amount of your own money you can contribute to each type of health benefit account. In 2015, for example, a single person is limited by law to contributing $3,350 to their HSA and $2,550 to their FSA. And the limit for HRAs is actually zero, because you usually can't contribute any of your own money to them. Fourth, finally, the HSA is the only account that you can earn interest on or use towards investments. That's right, you're legally allowed to collect interest on your HSA money or invest in things like mutual funds. But here's the catch. These options depend entirely on what the bank that manages your account offers. So be aware, for instance, that if your particular HSA's bank only offers 0.01% interest and no option to invest it, that's what you're stuck with. No matter which health benefit account you choose, remember to keep receipts for all expenses you're claiming. Be sure you understand your account's terms and conditions, and don't be afraid to ask your employer for help with anything you're not clear on. Here's to your health.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library. Executive producer is Joe Crawford, and Christina Wilty is our associate producer and sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannelgraph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library, .info.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill, Leah Carter, Joe Crawford, and Kathy Norton. Along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Ryan Stacey and associate producer Christina Wiltsey. It's part of the It's Your Money Project at the Monroe County Public Library. Our engineer is Rob Schoon, with theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer, Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have the show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program. It's coming up next here on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.